Good morning. Today with me, I have Tassa Tamore. She's the CTO of Textio. Welcome to Managers Club.
Thank you so much. Hi.
Tassa, let's just jump right in. You work at Textio, which is in the business of helping that job descriptions are inclusive. I've heard of this product. I could say a few words about the importance of inclusive job descriptions.
Yeah, absolutely. Sourcing and recruiting is hard, right? We know it's a big, heavy-duty investment. It's competitive. And it takes a long time. And you can email as many people as you want, and you can post to as many places as you want. But if the language you're using, your messaging, isn't inclusive and isn't going to engage a broad and diverse audience, you're kind of undermining your own efforts. So what we do is we help support and guide you along the way to ensure that your messaging and your communication is going to reach that diverse audience, and you're going to maximize the impact of your efforts through recruiting and sourcing. I can tell you too, something I'm wildly excited about. We are expanding our offering into the performance feedback space because we recognize and know that performance feedback today is riddled with bias. It is often not the most high quality, actionable. And so we are applying that same language understanding and guidance to performance feedback so people can have access to high quality, bias-free feedback for their own professional development growth, which I'm so excited about.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll get to that because I definitely want to talk to you about that. Could you say, besides the job description, what can hiring managers do to hire diverse candidates?
You need to be really monitoring the health of the entire candidate journey. The same way you would do in sales, right? You understand your pipeline and the funnel and which kinds of organizations and customers are falling out where. You need to do the same for people who are interviewing for your company. And so you need to track where people are, like, what does your pipeline look like? What's the representation there look like? And who's getting through the interview process? And where are people falling off and why? That way you can troubleshoot. So your talent tracking systems, your candidate tracking systems, some of these out there actually offer the insights you need to get those patterns. We're noticing that we have maybe a lot of women in the early pipeline, but then the people that we're actually getting through to the final stages of the interview process, maybe they all fall off at some point. Why is that happening? And tackle that. So get that observability and tracking in place and look for systems that are going to help you do that. You also need to ensure that your interview process itself is combating bias through that process. Bias is going to be there. You're not going to get rid of it. We all come to the table with bias baked in. And so you need to coach people on how to catch it, how to track it, and stop it. So the bias is going to show up in the kinds of questions you're asking. It's going to show up in the feedback that people write up about a particular candidate, the roundtable conversations you might have, and then ultimately the decision-making of the hiring manager. So you need to coach and guide the interviewers on how to run bias-free interviewing. And you need to really coach the hiring managers on how to look out for themselves and check themselves in their decision-making and where their bias might be showing up and influencing who's getting through and who's not. The last thing that I find is really important and is if you're trying to build out that diverse team and you've found the candidates you want to be talking to and they're going to bring in new lived experiences and perspectives, you need to be really upfront with them about what they're walking into. So you don't want someone to come and join your company and then be surprised about what the culture and environment is like and then just be like, JK, never mind, this is not actually going to be good for me. You need to be ready, and everybody who's interviewing needs to be ready to talk about the reality of what diversity looks like at your company. What is the story around inclusion and belonging there? Where is your company on investing in that, and what are they doing? So you can be forthcoming with candidates. That builds up trust. It shows that you're willing to have uncomfortable conversations. That's the only way you're going to change and create a safe culture. So don't shy away from talking about those things early on in a conversation with your candidates.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there I want to follow up on. So one of the things you mentioned is coaching people when they interview, not to be biased or in evaluating things. What are a couple things people can do to make sure that they're interviewing in a non-biased way?
Look at your questions. Make sure your questions are surfacing up actual skills and experience and behaviors. You want to ask for examples of what a person has done, so that you're having really concrete examples that you can talk about of real life situations that have happened. Then you can really look at the decisions a person's making and the contributions that they are bringing to the table. You can check even the language that you're using. Again, going to even the guidance that Textio provides for recruiting things and performance feedback, the language you're using in this space, if you start using, we need tell me about a time you've gone aggressively after some kind of goal. And what's that language doing to this person? What kind of space is it creating for them to feel safe? So being aware of your tone, making sure that you're asking for real life examples of things so that you're centering on something real versus your opinions about philosophical questions can get really challenging to evaluate without bias showing up. I think the other piece too is making sure you have a diverse panel of interviewers right there. That way you're going to get more people in the room with different perspectives on someone's answer, and they can challenge each other and see different sides of it and recognize when actually, okay, that person is using that kind of, that candidate may be presenting something in a particular way, and it's because of something from where that person is coming from and their culture, their background, and being able to recognize when there's differences. Just because they don't speak like me, analyze me, value things the same way I do, doesn't mean that this isn't a strong candidate for us, and you need more people in the room to check that and evaluate that.
I want to ask you one other thing. We're talking about these diverse candidates that we have and interviewing them fairly and all that. But one of the problems I see is even before that, sourcers and recruiters will be like, we can't find the candidates in the first place to even get them in the room. So they give up. Could you talk about how do you even go about getting the diverse candidates in the pipeline and in the room?
There's a bunch of different strategies that you can use. And so for one, there's systems out there that will help you actually search for if someone has been a graduate of maybe where they went through Code 2040 or these programs that are actually helping diversify the tech industry. And you can find people who have graduated from these programs or have mentored and coached at these programs. When you're searching for LinkedIn, instead of looking for what college they went to or what other places they've worked at, look for the places they've engaged in that might demonstrate this person, either they themselves are going to bring in new diversity to our team that we don't have, new representation our team that we don't have, or that they at least care about this and they're thinking about this and they're talking about it and they're part of the conversation about how to create a safe and more diverse environment in the tech industry. There's a less so today post-quarantine, but there's a lot of great conferences and events that are out there that are focused on this. There used to be Paracomp, there's Code 2040, Data for Black Lives, Lesbians Who Tech, Afro Tech. There's so much that is happening out there. So go and sponsor those events, show up at those events and build those relationships.
Okay, I think that's good advice.
One additional piece of advice there. Companies a lot of times will really lean into the, you get a referral fee or a referral sort of bonus, and that can be really good, but it can also mean that people are just going to go get their buds, and their buds might have just very similar lived experiences. And so that might not contribute to diversity in your team if you're leaning heavily on go find your friends and bring your friends into this company and recruit, because that's a lot more like economical for us. That can counteract your efforts to bring in more diversity into your team.
That's a really good point that, I could see that happening. You were telling me a story that at a previous company, you and your team made a huge impact and a massive transformation in diversity and inclusion. Could you share a little bit of that story and what you learned there?
Yeah. When I started, the R&D team was around 20 people. And when I left, it was around 80. And when we knew that we need to grow, and we needed to grow quickly. And so one of the first things I did coming in was saying, yes, I acknowledge, I see that we need to hire and be ideal to do that fast, and we won't do it quickly. This takes longer, and setting that expectation from the exec team all the way through the organization to the most entry-level engineers, because it impacts everybody if you're not having enough people in the room to do the work. And so everyone needs to understand that what's urgent to us is building out a lot of different lived experiences in positions across the team, that we are investing in diversity within our team because we know we'll be stronger for it. And that's what's urgent. Not filling this seat today, not building out the size of the team today. And so if everyone's on the same page, you have freedom to take the time to do this. So our tracking was certainly a scrappy approach to doing our best guess, but it really helped us catch moments where we were falling down on, we were filling a role because somebody was a friend of somebody, and we were going to like fast track that candidate versus, no, we need to actually interview a lot of people so that there's a lot of opportunity for different folks to potentially fill this role. We did our best to track things along the way and how people were moving through the pipeline. The other thing that was really, I think, super important there was that we wanted to start in our senior leadership roles. There was some diversity and representation within the team, but it was mostly in the sort of earlier career roles. And I see a lot of companies do that. They're like, oh, I know how we can do this. Let's just go start with those entry-level roles. And that's where we're going to go find lots of candidates with lots of different lived experiences and identities. And starting out that way creates such a problematic imbalance of power. And that's really hard to work your way out of. And when people come into organizations and they see that, so wait, like, I see some myself represented here, but when I look up the chain of command, all the positions of power, it's a bunch of cis hetero white dudes sitting up there. And that can be an uncomfortable place to want to join. And so you're not going to see the change happening. You need to change. You're not going to have the decision-making that you need to help catch where the inequities are happening or where the bias is showing up if you don't have diversity and representation in those leadership positions. So actually starting there, and again, it will take longer, but that was a really key piece for us. And it makes it a really helps cultivate a safer space for everybody and better conversations and more critical thinking about how we're operating. And of course, the last thing I talked about already, you asked about the where to find folks, look, investing in those conferences.
A really great point you raised about starting at the top, because a lot of companies will pride themselves in these diversity and inclusion stats. Oh, we have X percent in these things. But when you look at it, they're all at the bottom of the pyramid, super at the bottom of the pyramid. So what can we do to make sure that these diverse people we have don't just get stuck at the bottom of the pyramid?
We've talked about the tracking and observability for different parts of an employee experience, from recruiting, sourcing, to all the way through to when an employee actually decides to move on for your company. You need to be tracking and having observability about the mobility within your company. Who's getting promoted at what rates? Who is not? How are salary adjustments happening? And if you are tracking that and you're understanding that against the demographics within the organization, you can see those patterns of, oh, wait, hold up. We are not promoting people at the same rate dependent on their identity. And you can catch that. You can't catch that if you don't track it. And so it's really important that you have visibility and monitoring of what's happening there so you can check yourself and address issues as they come up. I talked about, you know, Textio is moving into performance feedback. We're doing that because that is one of the biggest gatekeeping factors in an organization. Your salary, your promotion is dependent on these performance reviews that happen. And we know women get 22% more feedback around their personality than men. We know that Black men receive like 1/3 less feedback than white women. That's just by word count in their feedback. Feedback is not equitable. People do not have equitable access to high quality, actionable feedback. And without that, people aren't going to move in the same rates across your organization. And so making sure you're investing in their growth and development with fair feedback and knowing where those issues are showing up and tackling that. Because maybe some departments or some managers need more coaching and support to provide better guidance and growth. I think one of the things that I think about a lot is how much an organization and a community, especially in management and leadership, are talking about issues of bias and how that can impact people or the power dynamics. The decision-making power that we have as managers is huge. We can make or break a person's career. And so if we're not talking amongst ourselves about that, we are going to miss when we are holding people back, no matter how well-intentioned we are. Because again, that bias is there for all of us. And so keeping that conversation going in an ongoing way, not just, oh, we did our D&I training last year, so check, done. You have to keep that education, that conversation, that discussion going constantly, and especially investing in that coaching and conversation with your management group.
So I'll check this blog post that you have, but I would assume it's not just the volume of comments that are lower for these underrepresented minorities. The ratings themselves are probably lower overall. Yeah.
It's the ratings, it's the quality, it's the how actionable it is. Like, it's across the board.
Exactly. Exactly. There was an article someone shared with me of comments on GitHub pull requests. And if you were a woman, underrepresented minority, if you were older or something, you got a lot more pushback on your pull requests than if you weren't.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're held to a different standard.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So yeah, I strongly encourage, if you're interested in more numbers, we did this massive research project. That's what really informed us. Oh, wow. Performance feedback is the place to go and address the issues. because we had all of this research and we were really looking at what's happening out there. So we've got this huge write-up on the Textio blog. You can read all about our findings. It's a frustrating and tough read, but we're gonna change it and make it better.
All right, I'm going to check it out. I want to go to another topic then, this kind of concept of the leaky bucket. We do all this work to get the diverse candidates in. Now you're trying to work on the performance management and all this, but a lot of people just leave. And I know in your career, you also left for a while. So what can we do in the tech industry after we had all the trouble to get the diverse candidates, not to have them just leave?
Yeah. It's so funny. I did leave. I was a bald, tattooed lesbian working in corporate America in software engineering. There was no other women on my team. There was like very few women in the company. And I didn't realize at the time actually why I left. I was just like, oh, this isn't, now I have the language to be like, oh, there was no sense of belonging in that environment. People were certainly welcoming, but it was not like I have found my place and I feel like I belong here at all. And so I did, I left the industry because it's everywhere I looked around the industry, that's what all I saw. So it goes to that representation, like really making sure that your company is thinking about what belonging means and you're asking people what their experience is so that what the problems are. You might get all the awards, like we're the best place to work. Yay, it's so awesome. We have great t-shirts and like free beer on tap, will not tell you about what that experience of belonging is. It's fun at a company is different than belonging. Excitement about a startup is different than belonging. And so figure out how to get that signal from the people who work there and send out the engagement surveys, and be transparent about what you find. Have those conversations openly so people will start surfacing up more information. It's scary to tell your story about whether or not you're feeling a sense of belonging, connection, inclusion in an organization. But if your company is starting the conversation, it makes it a lot easier for you to contribute to what you're experiencing. And so everybody starts contributing to the conversation, making it a safer space for a diverse team to thrive. At that company we were talking about before, one of the things that happened when I came in, we didn't have a competency matrix. There wasn't like a career ladder or anything. And so when I set out to develop that, and I knew, again, that we're growing our team and we wanted to build a great place for a diverse team to exist, that I wanted to be really explicit about what a person's contributions were in inclusion and belonging. So it's not, yes, there's a whole thing about here's your tech skills and how that evolves over time. Here's your product mindset, your security understanding. And there's a whole line specifically just on inclusion. So as you move up in seniority and into leadership roles, there was clear expectations of what your contributions here could look like. And it also served as a gatekeeping thing. So it meant that if folks were coming through and they're trying to move up in their career and they were like the strongest engineer, there's like amazing engineer, can churn out code really fast, super scalable, maintainable. But if they were not contributing and demonstrating a commitment to creating a healthy experience of belonging in the organization, they weren't going to move ahead. So we were really setting that expectation for everybody. Because no one person can do it. You can't rely just on like your head of DEI. Although yes, certainly have that person, but they are not going to do it by themselves. Training every once in a while is not going to do it by itself. Everybody has to be committed to creating an environment that's safe for a diverse team to thrive and being a part of that. And you need to be explicit about it.
That's really interesting that you put that on the career ladder as an expectation, because I don't think a lot of people have that in their career ladders. We talked a lot about belonging, so I kind of want to run this by you. So yeah, there's belonging and people say, be yourself at work. But yet for underrepresented minorities, women, people like that, some of them actually, how can I say, they try to get along. They don't actually really feel comfortable being themselves, and sometimes try to be too nice and to be liked. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I hate it. And it's so real. If you are the other in the room, if you are coming from, you are part of a systematically marginalized group, you are going to have this intense pressure to prove that you should be there and to hold on to that invitation to be in the room. And one of the strategies that can come pretty naturally to folks is I can get along with people. I'm going to be nice. I'm not going to introduce friction here. And I'm going to prove my value by taking on more things. I'm going to be the person that writes the meeting notes or does whatever this. And you focus so much on not adding friction and getting along with people and being like the nice person in the room, that all your energy starts going to that. And the kickback that happens is that's really taxing. The emotional labor that goes into that is exhausting. So like cue burnout, so that's problem number one. Problem number two is like imposter syndrome, like ratchets up, because now you're like, oh, people want me here because I'm nice. People want me here because I'm willing to take the meeting notes and schedule the next meeting and document the thing. And they're not celebrating my contributions for like my actual role as an engineer or designer, or whatever it is that you're in. And so it then gets reinforced. So you keep, this is what you're being celebrated for. You're putting all your time and energy into that instead of really proving yourself as an engineer, again, like whatever your craft is. And it just turns into this like self-fulfilling kind of thing and a cycle that's really hard to break. And you start getting asked to do those things more than what your actual job is. And for me, man, that's why I actually ended up at one point, you know, I loved writing software. I loved writing code. It was just like candy to me. It'd be like 2 a.m. and go ahead and try and steal my keyboard from me right now. Like I am having the time of my life. But in all of these rooms, I was doing that thing. I was like, oh, I'll take the notes. I'll set that up so people would value me being there and maybe invite me to come back. And by doing that, I was being recognized for things that are more on like the human side of things and the management side of things and the process side. So I started getting encouraged into management roles. And looking back, I moved into management from engineering, from being an IC, earlier than I think I should have. I wish I'd stayed longer. And I think that would have benefited me in several different ways. I love my job. I love where I ended up. But that thing, that strategy I was employing then had real impact on my career journey in a way that I'm like, yeah, that's a bummer. I can't go back and undo that thing that happened 20 years ago.
So interesting. Yeah, I think they call this like glue work is another term for this kind of stuff. Glue work. It's a famous article on it. That's so interesting. Yeah, so you basically ended up in management because of all the glue work you ended up doing, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned imposter syndrome. I want to ask you about this because you told me that you coach people on imposter syndrome and totally marginalized groups, underrepresented minorities, women, I think disproportionately suffer from imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's so personal. And you know, there's so much writing out there and so many resources. So go ask the internet. There's a lot of great information out there. But a couple of the sort of key things that I usually talk about with people is one, okay, so yes, remember that you're not alone. Which is easy to say, like when I'm actually like in the depths of my own like feelings with imposter syndrome and I'm looking at the room around me, there's no way I can look at that room and be like, yeah, they're feeling it too. Not going to happen. I'm pretty convinced everyone there is perfect and I just can't do my job and I'm the only one in the room who's feeling that way. So it's not that kind of remember that you're not alone. It's as you're operating in the world, hear the stories when people are talking about it and hold on to those for those moments when you're feeling it yourself. And it's like there was this one time where I meet with a group of VPEs and CTOs on a regular basis, and we share our challenges to help each other with. There was this one guy who he just seemed like he was at the top of his game. His resume was impeccable. He led this really successful organization, like thousands, multi-thousands of people in global organization, had the answers to everything, was always just really engaging, wonderful human being. Seemed just like pinnacle of all the things. And we come into the session and where he comes up to share the challenge that he wanted advice on from the group. So here comes, in my mind, Mr. Perfect in his job. And he goes in and he gives a whole story about imposter syndrome and how he's really, it's holding him back and he's struggling with it. And I was like, in what universe is this happening? Is this happening right now? I was completely blown away. And so we had this whole really helpful conversation. And so when my imposter syndrome fires up, I remember not the other people in the room have probably experienced this before too, but I remember that person who looked to me like everything I could ever possibly dream of being in my life and is dealing with it too. So remembering that you're not alone can take the power out of it. Understanding the flavor of your imposter syndrome of the hour, because it could be that you need to actually just have your manager check. You need a reality check on what's expected of you and get aligned on the same page, because you, in a lot of cases, people find that they're doing so much and their managers actually, these are the only two things actually I was expecting of you and you're rocking that. And I don't understand how you're doing these other things too. Like that story comes back so many times. So if you have a safe relationship with your manager, go and ask them like for feedback and talk about what your concerns are and get sort of reality check how you're doing. Sometimes it's just the kind of from imposter syndrome where you just need to vent it out. So go find the bud, hang out, scream and shout about how painful it is, and eat cake, get better, like move along. And then other times for myself, it's like the voice is just like the little habit that's sticking in there and I got to kick it out of gear. So I'll go and do a thing that I do feel fine about. I'm going to go skateboarding with my kids. I'm going to go like rearrange furniture because that's my happy place. And I feel like confident in how I rearrange my furniture. And so finding that other thing that can make you feel confident and secure again. But one of the sort of most important concepts that, or not important, but for me, one of the most impactful concepts is recognizing when I'm feeling that imposter syndrome. Oftentimes it's a good sign that it's because I'm pushing myself outside of my comfort zone. I'm doing something I don't know how to do. And that's how I'm going to grow. That's a good thing. And I better not know how to do all the things. Perfection's not a thing. So why am I going to expect that of myself? And if I know all the things, I'm going to be bored. So if I'm feeling imposter syndrome, it's because I'm unsure of myself, because I'm challenging myself to do something new. So it can be a sign of something good and embracing that and looking, oh, actually, look at me being courageous here and doing this thing that I'm not quite sure of, and letting that be a positive thing instead of a tear myself down thing that I don't know the answers.
That's great. Yes, it totally can be a positive thing. That's a good observation. I want to ask you another thing about, work-life balance. Some people can work longer hours and others can't. And there's a lot of conflicting signals in our industry where we really applaud workaholics. What are your thoughts on this with regards to diversity?
I think there's such a active conversation about this right now. And my thinking on it is still evolving. Work-life balance, what that means is so individual. And what I see happening is that people decide that work-life balance means you take this many vacations, or you take this long a vacation, or you only work this many hours. And we're coming up with a formula and deciding that everybody should fit said formula, but that might not work for everybody. And folks, again, like going back to people who are from systematically marginalized groups, might not feel secure in pushing for what work-life balance looks like for them. They might not be feeling the same access or the entitlement to ask for that in the same way their counterparts might. And so there's a real challenge in trying to prescribe something that fits everybody. And it's on managers a lot to really understand the individual and create that safe space to have that conversation and to look out for it. And vacation is not work-life balance. Make sure to avoid that concept. I hear that a lot. Oh, you're burnt out. Go take a vacation. That's not going to fix it. Work-life balance is having enough space for yourself to exist both while you're working and while you're not working. And that's the part that's very individualized. Somebody might want to work a slower paced day with little breaks and move around and get like social on Slack throughout the day. And so they might go a little bit longer to get through their workload. Somebody else might be like, I am not going to stop for a glass of water all day, but I'm going to get through my work a little bit faster because I'm not taking those breaks. And that means I have more time to do my own thing outside of the working hours. So really finding out, like for me, I can't unplug if I haven't wrapped up projects. And so for me, I might want to work some extra hours. And then I get people being like, you're being a workaholic, stop doing that. I'm like, yeah, but when I unplug, you're not going to get me on Slack. I'm unplugging for real because I wrapped that up and I feel good about that. Really, again, just like the work-life balance, like imposter syndrome, is so individual and personal, and managers are in such an important position for helping people get that and get equitable access to finding that for themselves.
I think that's great. So basically encouraging like managers to be basically proactive because, yeah, marginalized people might not feel comfortable to ask or to be aware of these things. So just checking with them to make sure that they're okay and they're achieving work-life balance.
Especially, I'll say, to companies have the PTO policy, the unlimited PTO, which like, yes, great. And looking out for those folks that aren't exercising their time off options. And because especially like when I'm in organizations where we're not tracking it, which there's a lot of freedom in it, and I think there's a lot of great aspects about that, but there is a real risk in just a select few being willing to be like, yeah, I'm going to go take another 2-week vacation while everybody else is over here, like just powering through stuff. So really thinking about who is leveraging the options.
Totally. I think in those organizations where they don't track PTO, there's cases where people basically don't take any.
Yeah.
So not tracking it can lead to people not taking any. So totally. Tacita, you've shared a lot of really good information here. Are there any books or resources you might recommend to listeners who want to dig more into this, learn more?
For myself, when there's a particular topic I'm interested in, I will go and ask the Google, because I actually want to get a lot of different perspectives. It's also tends to be more bite-sized reading. So I don't have a particular book. I would also say, going to that work-life balance thing, whatever book you want to read, let it be candy to you. So for you, you get some breathing room. And so maybe it's not a book about management or DevOps metrics or how to scale a team. Maybe it's a book actually just about sci-fi mystery or something.
I'm interested in this performance management thing you do because, yeah, that's a whole nother huge problem. People don't get promoted at the same levels. They don't get the same ratings. They're more likely put on performance improvement plans. There's so many things there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Like this problem, like it goes from recruiting to being there to the performance management to the people quitting to not being able to get to the senior levels. Like it's just so much.
It really is. And we're announcing the product next week. And I just like, it's a really hard problem to solve, but it impacts just so much and the learning that you get from it. So even if you still aren't writing the best feedback and you're ignoring everything that we've said, you learned by doing it. And because we're giving you suggestions all the way. And the leaders in the organization also get the heat map of where the problems are because they get the data and the insights of these teams over here we're seeing more bias being corrected or not corrected, but it's showing up more in those performance feedbacks. The performance review. So we got to go do more coaching over there. So it's helping the writer, but it's also helping the leaders of organizations know where to go and tackle the problems.
I think that's really interesting. Tacita, you've been really generous with your time. It's been great to talk with you and you've shared a lot of great information. Where can people go if they wanted to learn more about you, connect with you afterwards?
Best place is LinkedIn. I haven't been writing or posting much in recent years, but I do enjoy connecting with people. I have a lot of just informational conversations and exchanges with folks I find various events like this. So you can just feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn and throw a Calendly link your way and we can have a conversation.
Sounds good. I'll put a link in the show notes. So thank you again so much for coming on.
Thanks so much.